Welcome to Manage Your Tools. This is Sarah.
And this is Kate.
Today's podcast, how to get subordinate managers to do one-on-ones, part one of two.
The questions this cast answers are, how can I get subordinate managers to do one-on-ones? How can I measure whether or not my managers are doing their one-on-ones? Do I need to set up a reporting system for my subordinate managers' one-on-ones?
If you want answers to these questions and more, keep listening.
London in November? I'm thinking Christmas lights, chilly weather, Piccadilly, maybe even a trip to Harrods. Not for you, of course, for your loved ones. And we'll be there. Come to London and learn the next steps to becoming a more effective professional in our Effective Manager and Effective Communicator courses. We're coming across the pond because we have fantastic international listeners, and we'd love to see you there. Sign up for our London event at manager-tools.com/training.
So, okay, when you become director, you start to get a sense of what it means to be an executive. Now, in all honesty, I will say there's a lot of people who are directors who aren't executives and vice versa, but you're no longer getting to manage the work you did before, the stuff that your directs are working on. Instead, you're managing managers who are managing people to get the actual work done. And one of the things that you learn is that managers are typically much more likely to assert themselves than individual contributors were when you were managing individual contributors.
Yeah, it's interesting, the change in behavior associated with different assignations of role power, right?
Absolutely.
As you achieve more role power, your behavior shifts, even if you don't maybe notice it, and it does, because you have a psychological feeling.
Yes, a feeling, exactly.
Yeah, I don't know if that's a technical way to phrase that.
It's not, but that's what it is.
You make assumptions about allowances in your behavior based on the role power you've assumed, and so do your directs. And the obligation you have to get the most effectiveness out of your organization can clash with the individuality of the managers you're managing, or simply their expectations of what the job entails, since they are new to their role as well in many cases, and growing and learning. And it's interesting that many of us forget that change that we ourselves went through. And this difference, this idea of the difference between what they're supposed to do and what they think is what they want to do or who they are, is particularly true for the manager tools manager who's gotten promoted to lead other managers who don't lead your way or who aren't managing the manager tools way. Mm-hmm. They haven't had the benefit of us saying to them, hey, here's a way to do it that works and is tested, and they might then therefore be doing it another way. And so when you tell them you're going to require them to do one-on-ones, they'll tell you, they may tell you, it's not their management style. Mm-hmm. But that will pass once you let them know you'll be measuring their performance around management, and this is the metric you've chosen. The good news is, if you'd like to make this measurement, the system you use can be as simple as asking questions. It doesn't require of you some large framework with, you know, any other rigor. You can do it this way. And you can also tie their managerial performance to their performance review, which, of course, is just a completely new thought, I'm sure.
Yeah.
And you can also ask in skip-level meetings to make sure their directs, which, you know, the whole point of one-on-ones, are benefiting.
Yes, exactly.
So we have some guidance around how to get them to engage with this process.
Yeah.
And we've got, what, four parts?
Four parts. Yeah, exactly. So we're going to start by talking about the fact that management style is a myth. Then asking your directs about their one-on-ones in each of your one-on-ones with them, followed by make one-on-ones part of performance review standards, and finally, validate that their skips in skip-level meetings are saying they did receive the one-on-one.
Mm-hmm. So before we get into specific things you can do to ensure your subordinate managers roll out one-on-ones and the rest of the Trinity, it's worth it to debunk a myth that is prevalent out there about management that does significantly reduce the likelihood of people behaving in a structure and really makes management development worldwide a little bit harder to accomplish. It's really like a dampens managerial development.
Management, unlike the other processes that we engage in our organizations, is kind of treated like a soft skill. You know, it's one of those things where, congratulations, listeners of the Manager Tools audience, you've discovered that there's actually a metrics-based way that has data to prove it's successful as it pertains to leading people. But not everyone's discovered that there is a metrics-based way. There's data proven about how you can better lead people. So it feels a little bit squidgy. It feels a little bit like a soft skill. And thus, we back away from it. The myth that we all experience is that each one of us is entitled to our own management style. This myth is pervasive and corrosive. And if you believe it, your response is a completely rational one. No one can blame you for it, but it is completely hampering your effectiveness. And in the context of this cast, you cannot let it hamper the effectiveness of the managers who report to you, and even further down if you have multiple layers below you, if that applies to you. So we want to debunk this myth because some of you are probably like, I'm not really sure you guys are totally on point here. So let's debunk the myth with a thought experiment.
Before we get to the thought experiment, I want to bring up the fact that it appears, based on the way people are expected to manage without a lot of training in a lot of organizations, that there is some assumption that management is something you're supposed to learn through osmosis. And that kind of makes it seem like it's not a science. It's not something that people study. It's not something that we have data around. It's not something that we are looking at to improve. And that really, that idea that management is a science by which we learn through osmosis is antithetical to what science is about. And so if you're forced into a situation where you're promoted and you're not trained, it may appear to you, based on the lack of training, that there's some reason why you don't need training. And then therefore, it's totally logical to assume, well, I'm supposed to figure it out myself. And therefore, okay, I'm going to come up with my own style. I'm going to come up with my own way. They put you in that position. So if you're in that position and you're thinking to yourself, gosh, I mean, this is what happened to me. Yeah, y'all, we understand. We have been there. Just because they don't teach you doesn't mean there isn't somebody to teach you.
Yeah, exactly.
Doesn't mean it's not a science. Doesn't mean there isn't a right way. Just because somebody didn't teach me how to rewire chandeliers doesn't mean there isn't a series of steps that should be involved. It's been a long time since I've rewired a chandelier. I don't know why that analogy came to me.
But it's a good one. It makes sense.
There's a lot of stuff that people don't teach you how to do that there are processes for. And I truly believe it leads to managers feeling really defensive about the way they manage and their style, because it's really unfair the way that organizations and companies put managers in position and don't train them. So why wouldn't you feel defensive about the way you've been doing it? Mm-hmm. The premise there is, in a lot of people's minds, I think, you know, you didn't tell me how to do it, and now you're saying the way I'm doing it is wrong.
Yeah.
And that is unfair. I totally can see why that would make someone feel defensive and why then they would feel entitled to their own style, because nobody said to them, it's not about style. There's a good way to do it. And I just want to be clear about the fact that we completely understand where you're coming from. We really do. And I believe that part of the reason people find us is because they know inherently that there's probably a real way to do it. Mm-hmm. And so we're here to support.
Yeah.
We have this understanding of what you've gone through. we're here to tell you style isn't the answer. And we have this example of how you can prove it to yourself. And just remind yourself that it's not your fault that you went through it this way.
Yes.
And your assumptions were all valid. Now you're discovering, hey, my assumptions might not have been accurate.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Exactly. Okay, so we're going to play a little thought experiment here around a series of organizational systems that we are all familiar with so that we can show you how your saying management style is valid doesn't really work for our organization. So suppose one of your directs came to you one day and said, listen, I'm not a fan of having to wear this dumb company badge at work. I think the electronics in it are affecting my aura. I'd like you to arrange for me to not have to wear it, but also still get access to all of the things that I need around here. How would you react? Your mouth would fall open. Of course, your mouth would just fall open, just stare at them and just blink in their direction. And then you would immediately deny your direct's request without even thinking about it. Because I'm sorry, what you just asked isn't a thing.
Yeah, it's not part of the systems that we employ here. And some of the systems are non-negotiable.
Yeah.
Similarly, somebody comes to you and says, look, I don't like the new online expense accounting system. I won't be using it. I just want to do it the old way, where I drop a bunch of receipts that have been sitting on the table at Chili's in Omaha on your desk with a post-it that says, these receipts total up to $37 a day. Give me my cash. And again, if that was somebody's premise, you would... You could laugh them out of your office. You could say, yeah, dude, no.
Yeah, no.
So, okay.
That's not how it works around here. And folks, we're going to keep going. We've got more examples that are even more clear of this. But now is the time for you to start thinking, start asking yourself, why is it, given those previous examples, that I would literally laugh people out of my office and tell them if they don't like it, they should probably find another job? What's the underlying principle that makes those things different from how they lead?
Okay. So more examples, but with that question in mind. A direct comes to you and says, look, I've had problems with banks before, so I don't like direct deposit. I know some people who don't like direct deposit. And they say, since I don't like it, I'd like to be paid in cash. And I don't want it monthly because that doesn't work for me. I want it weekly. And of course, you would not entertain that idea. Nope. No. Hard pass.
Hard pass. Exactly. Exactly. Or if one of your directs said to you, boss, you know, I've never really liked email, so I just don't use it. What I'd prefer for you and everyone else on the team to do instead is just text me. Okay. So now that one's got to be so obvious. Such an egregious example. In what world could one of our directs just be like, I don't do email, and we're all okay with it? It's all right. Well, no worries.
It would be like if somebody said, hey, I don't like Teams, and I know everybody else in the company uses it. For myself, from a stylistic perspective, I can express myself better with Zoom. And therefore, because everyone in the organization uses Teams, you're going to have to tell everybody, hey, Kate doesn't use Teams. If you want to talk to her, you have to use Zoom, because that's more my style.
Yeah.
And I know there are organizations listening where we use Teams for a reason.
Yeah.
It has security implications. Yes. And so you would be like, dude, I love you. No. I know you prefer the style of emojis on Zoom better. Cool story, bro. We're not going to do it.
No. Exactly. And these examples are so obvious. They're so obvious to anyone listening. It's like, oh my gosh, of course. Of course I wouldn't fall for that.
Right. You have to be paid the way we pay. You have to wear a badge if we need it. You have to use email because that's a professional. I mean, these are things that you've signed up to work here. Mm-hmm. You signed up to use these things.
Exactly. Exactly. Now, compare those examples that everyone admits are just nutty with you telling all of your direct reports, who are managers, that they're now going to be required to do weekly manager tools one-on-ones with all of their directs.
Mm-hmm.
You can admit it.
Yeah.
You're a little bit worried now. You're like, ooh, some of them are going to say no. They might resist overtly, maybe just subtly. Like they'll say, okay, but then not really do it. Okay. So now the question, why are you not inclined to respond to this perfectly legitimate request with the exact same derision you did in previous examples?
Well, because the request isn't legitimate, just like the other ones aren't. And we can tell you, we've asked this question of managers for the last many, many, many years. The reason you're not inclined to this to respond with the same level of incredulity is because you believe that directives that come from the top of organizations, head of security, CFO, head of payroll, CIO, are enforceable on your team because they came from the top. And your guidance to your team does not have that level of authority associated with it. Therefore, it can be ignored.
Yeah, that's how you feel. You're completely wrong.
You're utterly, completely, and totally wrong. And so is virtually everyone we've ever met regarding this corner of organizational theory.
Yes, folks, listen. The whole point, the entire point of role power, with which the organization has imparted you for the organization's good, by the way, not for your good, for the organization's good, is to allow you to speak with the power of the CEO to your part of the organization regarding your part of the organization's workings, insofar as it does not conflict with higher level organizational guidance. You've been given the authority of the organization in areas. This is one of those areas.
So it's funny, one-on-ones is the one that always gets me because one-on-ones are simply meetings, right? Mm-hmm. There are so many meetings. And I know that managers believe they have the authority to ask their people to go to certain meetings. Mm-hmm. So why on God's green earth would you assume that it's okay for them to opt out of a meeting?
Right. Yeah, anyone can send a meeting request.
Right. Individual contributors ask for people to go to meetings. And if we're talking about one-on-ones, this is honestly simply a meeting. Now, it has purposes and you know, meaning and systems around it. So do the other ones.
Yeah.
Why, what is, it baffles me. What is the premise regarding one-on-ones that causes people to believe, oh, it's okay for my directs to say, I don't want to be involved in that meeting? There's a lot of meetings I don't want to go to, frankly. And guess what? A, I go. And B, they're less useful than one-on-one.
Exactly.
So what is the problem here?
Exactly.
Going back to your point that when you speak to your team, the systems and processes you put in place carry the same weight as a system or process that the CEO, CFO, or other senior officials who have authority in the system.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And I would argue, Kate, that in previous examples, what makes the not wanting to have your directs one-on-one, or not wanting to have your directs do one-on-ones, what makes it so egregious is all of those other systems, badges, accounting, pay, email, they're so relatively unimportant to the company's long-term success.
Yeah, they're housekeeping.
They're housekeeping. Exactly. Like they're basically like, okay, yeah, this isn't that important. There's nothing, the world's not going to crumble to an end if we don't do these things. And those are the ones that managers choose must be enforced.
Yeah, the idea that we go to a meeting and somebody says, oh, I'm late on my deadline, and be like, okay. But then if they don't do their timesheet, and I'm not talking about if you work in a governmental contracting facility, but the idea that we're willing to let deadlines slide around actual work and then we are hounding our people about timesheets reveals a discrepancy in people's thought processes around what actually creates success in the organization. And it is most, unfortunately, prevalent here and devastatingly detrimental to our ability to create results and do so in an environment that allows for the continued creation of those results. The most important system in every company is its managerial system, and it is unfortunately unenforced with devastating results on results. And I shouldn't use that word twice, results and retention. Yep. So it has this huge impact on results and retention. Mm-hmm. Even yep. though people are going around enforcing badges, they don't feel they need to enforce one-on-ones. And that is backwards. And we hope that now that you've heard it, you realize to yourself, oh my gosh, yes, it is backwards. I should not be doing it that way, so that we can help you do the things that are important because this is so much more important than
all of these other things that you get behind. And folks, this lack of enforcement on top of most managers' lack of general knowledge about their job, this lack of enforcement allows the flourishing of this managerial style myth that will cause your directs, who are themselves managers, to think they can get away with resisting your perfectly legitimate, completely reasonable request that they manage in a certain way. But they're wrong, you're right, and you should continue to press them to engage in more effective managerial system behaviors, regardless of their natural style. There's data to prove this style works, or that this system works. There's no data to prove their style works in the long run.
Yeah. Additionally, these meetings, honestly, when you really boil it down, really do kind of allow for a little bit of your own style because you're the person in there. So all we're asking you to do is sit down and schedule the time and then be yourself, be your professional self. And by the way, just an aside about management style and effectiveness, it's deeply upsetting. But we have never had a single HR department ever spend time educating directors and executives about what kind of managers they want promoted or what type of managers beyond demographics their data say makes for effective managers. If you're an exec with an HR business partner, you should encourage them to do the research.
Yeah.
Just if you want to help your HR friend out.
Yeah. For those situations where, because we've got to admit it, managers think to themselves at times, well, my directs will push back. But then to go a step further, it's my directs will push back and then they'll go to HR and HR won't have my back. But to Kate's point, HR doesn't have a better system. They just don't necessarily want you doing this one because someone complained. That's not a system.
Right. The idea being, okay, well, with HR, no news is good news, right? In a lot of cases.
Totally.
As long they don't give you any guidance until somebody starts yelling.
Yeah, exactly.
Which is management by exception. It's wrong in so many other ways. And this might not be true of your HR, in which case you work in an organization whose HR is doing right and we love them and please tell them we said hello. If your HR hasn't told you how to manage your people, except to say, don't do this thing that made somebody mad, please don't send them any flowers. We don't say hi to that HR group. We want to help. We know there are HR groups out there who do want to help. And in the same way that every department has its own foibles, HR has its own.
Yeah.
And one of those is, like many other groups, we're not going to tell you what to do, but we will tell you what not,
to do. Exactly. So that's super helpful.
Mm-hmm. We either don't have time or we can't give you guidance about this. And as long as no one's yelling, we guess you're doing fine.
Hey, folks, don't let the year-end holidays, festivities, and year-end actions get in the way of your early 2025 planning. Get ahead of the game and kickstart your year with our organizational training. Let Manager Tools bring on-site the Effective Manager, Effective Communicator, or Effective Hiring Manager training, all of which can be taught in an economical fashion, customized and tailored to your group. We can deliver these in person or virtually, whichever works best for you. If you'd like to learn more, contact Maggie at customerservice@manager-tools.com to learn more. That's all for this week, folks. Thank you so much for joining us. Join us again after the Thanksgiving break. That is, join us on December 2nd for a continuation of today's cast. And if you're a licensee, lucky you, you can print out the show notes for both parts today. We'll be right back.